Right. So when they're going through that my life was a lie thing, the first thing I point out is that your side wasn't a lie. Believe in the fact that you can love, because how many clients do you have that say, I'm unlovable, my trustometer is broken, I can't possibly trust. But if you look at your own side of the table, you loved, you gave. Not only did you gave 100 times more than the other person. You do know how to love, but you don't know how to be loved by true love. That's the difference. So rephrasing it helps you start on that.
Welcome to the Rising Beyond podcast, where you can find hope and healing after a toxic or abusive relationship. I'm Sybil Cummin, a licensed professional counselor specializing in working with victims and survivors of domestic violence and narcissistic abuse, including the youngest witnesses. Over the past decade, I have been honored to witness victims move to survivors and then to thriving in their lives. If you feel alone in your healing process, are dealing with the onslaught of post-separation abuse, or just needing some validation that you are not crazy, you are in the right place. Do you remember your light bulb moment? Maybe the first time you heard the term gaslighting or love bombing, or even the term narcissistic abuse? My guest today shares her light bulb moment and how she now helps survivors on all stages of their realizing what they're in, their light bulb moment, to living joyfully again. She's in my own backyard here in Colorado, so I'm so excited that we are connected. Today, I am talking with Tracy Malone. She is an author, speaker, educator, and international narcissistic abuse divorce coach. She is a survivor of abuse herself and the founder of NarcissisticAbuseSupport.com. Tracy's best-selling book, Divorcing a Narcissist, You Can't Make This Shit Up, as well as 32 healing journals are available to you. And I am so excited to have her today on the Rising Beyond podcast. I'm Sybil Cummin, and let's welcome Tracy to our podcast. Tracy, thank you so much for being with us on the Rising Beyond community today.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, so I know a little bit about you, but if you can share with our listeners, how did you kind of get into this work of helping those in a narcissistic relationship and who have left? How help them heal? How did you get into that work?
Well, it wasn't a planned career move. I can assure you of that. I earned a PhD, being PhD for victim, in learning about narcissistic abuse after I was indeed abused. I did not know what a narcissist was until about 7 years ago. And I had been through what the judge in my town called the most tortured divorce in our town's history. Yet no one ever said the word. My in-laws, my family, you know, I had no idea until the man I was dating post-divorce started cheating. And I was like, ew, get away, ick. And then after about 3 or 4 months, I went to a church sermon that morning on forgiveness. It was very impactful. Thought, you know what? I'm just going to forgive him. I don't want him back. I'll just let him go. It'll be so much freer. And so I went to forgive him for sleeping with other people, and he had me put in jail. So I was arrested and put into jail. And when I got out, friends said, he's gaslighting you. Look that up. And I did, and that led to the divorce. Oh, my goodness, to my family, to my friends, to people that I've surrounded myself with, because I didn't know what it was. And so I started my website to just educate. And then I started support groups here in Colorado, and I led one, and it was so full that the library got mad at us, and we had to do a second one. And then we would have 40 or 60 people in that room. So every month I was working with 50 to 100 people. And I was like, no, we have to learn to heal now, guys. Let's heal. And so then I started to study how do we heal and started teaching lessons. And it was years before I actually put out my shingle for coaching, because I had my own job. And so when I finally put it out, I kind of did both jobs for a while. until I could finally walk away from my 26-year career and this could sustain me.
Yeah. And you mentioned something that I think resonates with so many of the women in my community and, you know, clients in my practice is when you first heard the word or you first looked up the word like gaslighting or narcissism or, you know, the Darvo or whatever it is, how light, you know, that's a light bulb moment of like, wow, this is what I've been experiencing. Do you see that as well with the folks you coach?
Absolutely. And it doesn't matter where they are. If I've got, you know, I had people in Dubai and Cambodia and Spain last week, right? So it doesn't matter where you are. It's that moment of the word hitting your vocabulary and an understanding, which reflects when you look at the behaviors, they're not that uncommon. I mean, the things that they do, they all do. And, you know, maybe not as extreme in this particular scale or that, but when you get those words, you're like, oh my gosh, this is my life. And on my YouTube channel, people are like, were you looking in my window? You're describing my entire life. And you're like, me and you and all of us have had the same experience. So yeah, the clients, when they had that aha moment, it changes their life, but it also freaks them out. Mm-hmm. Like, let's be honest. It's not like, oh, so I've been abused. What can I learn now? You're like, ah, my life is a lie. And you're freaking out.
Yes. It's
hard to hold that until you keep on learning. And that's when we become detectives, right? That's where every one of your people and my people are up all night long, binge watching YouTube, you know, searching for answers, looking for, you know, books to read to find out more, because those little touches that they found do represent it. So they need more information.
Yeah. And it's a double-edged sword with that too, of when do you go so far down the rabbit hole that you are causing harm to yourself mm-hmm. in that learning, because you're not going to fully, from this human perspective, understand how, why someone who's abusive or is a narcissist, why they do what they do. Like, it's not in your human experience. So there's never going to be the like, oh, well, that's why I get it. So yeah, it's like balancing that, but having the information out there is so healing just in learning and starting to put those pieces together.
Yeah. And again, I think everybody comes in this door of learning, who does this? Why? Why? Why can't they stop being a jerk? Why can't they stop lying? You know, I'm with them for this many years. Why? And you know, sometimes it's that they didn't see it. And again, it doesn't mean it wasn't happening. It's those subtle things that have been happening for their whole life with this person that they might not have seen. But once they see it and have the words for it, they can't unsee it. It's like, mm-hmm. they go gaslighting me again. Oh my gosh, that's a lie. You know, it's the light that needs to shine to get them out of the hole and help them start to learn not only about them. That's what I find people do. They're like, I did a Tracy marathon and I watched all your videos, all 400 of them. Really? Wow. Right? But it comes to a point where if you are watching videos about them, once you know that they ruin birthdays and holidays, stop watching that and go, how do I heal? How do I get myself to a place where I'm not spending 8 hours a day on YouTube trying to learn about this, but how do I heal from this, right? And it's funny when I have like a meme on Instagram that is sort of like angry, narcissist or rah, you know, whatever it is. And then I have a, you know, you will heal kind of spiritual happy place. The angry one gets hundreds of posts and the other one gets 9. And it's like, they're just not in that place to do the yes. healing. So it is something they need to start to look at, because staying stuck in the rumination about them and learning. Once you learn it, you've got to learn it. But once you've learned it, stop watching the 85th love bombing thing and the this and that, because that is self-torture. And
yes.
it's making you heal. The explanations have to be accepted now, and that comes from within, right?
Yeah, and I appreciate you said that, because there is more to the healing process and so much more than just that understanding, mm-hmm. because it might explain things, but it's not going to help you decrease your hypervigilance. It's not going to help you find ways to regulate your nervous system. It's not going to help you increase your self-worth. It's not going to do any of those things, just the learning.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And so what I see, and it sounds like you see it a lot too, but we see a lot of stuckness within the healing process and the healing journey. And I wish all of you out there that we could tell you this healing journey was like, oh, you know, in 6 months, you're going to be good to go. I wish I could offer a timeline, and a short timeline at that would be great, but I can't. But where do you see, I guess, people get stuck the most?
Well, I think, as you were saying, I think situationally it changes. For me, my discovery was not only about the narc boyfriend, but oh my gosh, my entire marriage was a lie. And I knew it didn't end well, but I didn't understand the behaviors, right? And then I had to dig further for the parents and the family and the whys and all of that. So when we are stuck in that rumination, and it's not just one thing, right? It's not just a relationship. If you've got a one-hit wonder, you can get the heck out of there and get better a lot faster than when you are unpeeling the onion of your entire life, right? So I think each person is going to have a different timeline. It also depends on, were they with them for 2 years, 5 years, 10 years? How much damage to their self-esteem was done in that time? How many issues, how much trauma did they have? It's hard to come out of true trauma situation. And I'm sure you've had them too, where people have been beaten and their ribs are broken and there's a lot of domestic violence in addition to the emotional abuse. So there's a whole lot that people, their recovery plan is not a prescription. Take two and I'll call you in the morning, right? It is, what are their wounds? And to me, that's the biggest part, is everyone's going to have different ones, right?
Yeah.
If it was a quick relationship, doesn't mean it didn't do a lot of destruction, but you might not pick up on that abandonment thing if your husband left you after 25 years and went off with a 12-year-old, you know? So the wounds are going to be different, but they all need that validation. They need that understanding, and they need someone that can dig apart their soul and go, we need to work on this part. You know, like for me, the negative thought patterns that were imprinted on me from childhood, like I'm not good enough and you'll never be good enough. And, you know, all of that stuff. Those are the things that you have to tackle, is what are the recordings in your head telling you? Because that's what we want to unsew and take out the stitches.
Yeah. And I wanted to note that if you have been with someone 6 months and they're abusive, if you've been with someone 20 years and they're abusive, there isn't a hierarchy on worse. And I see that so often, of like, well, mine's not as bad as.
I know.
And they survivors will minimize their experience, which has been conditioned for you to do, is to minimize your experience through the relationship. But the trauma is relative. What might be traumatic to you would not be to me, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And so as much as possible, not comparing your healing process or your experience with anyone else's.
Yeah. And I have to drill that into my support group ladies, because, you know, one might have had a horrible, horrible court week and drama with the children and financial hell, right? And then another might be like, you know, I didn't have to talk to him, but I guess I'm not as bad as you guys. And it's like, no, you are still healing from the same wounds. Just that particular week, she was in a fire and you were in the pool. It was a different experience for that week. Next week, it'll be your turn to be in trauma when they actually do return your call. So there's no comparing. There's no, you know, you're worse, I'm better, you have more wounds, or I have more wounds. It doesn't matter, right? Everybody's prescription for recovery is different. There's no timeline. I've seen people that have been with a 6 month relationship take 4 years to recover. And I've seen people who have been in a 20 year relationship and said, I'm out of here, and they can heal a lot faster. And I have a chapter in my book called The Dumpy or the Dumper.
Mm-hmm.
If you were the one who did the dumping, you've already had the time to plan, to process, to get the heck out. But if you were dumped and it was blindsided like mine was, where you had no clue, and then you're in shock. So there's a difference of your experience based on if you did the dumping or they did the dumping, right? And so that gives you more power. If you were the one in charge and said, yeah, I've got my plan, I bought a new house, I'm all set, versus the one that is, I don't have any money, he won't give me any, and I don't know where I'll live. That's a fear that's based on reality. So everyone's going to have different places that they come to.
Yeah. And that is something that I see a lot, is there's such a focus on the escaping. Mm-hmm. Right? There's a huge focus on escaping abusive relationships, which there needs to be, absolutely. And I see that it leaves behind people who were discarded. Mm-hmm. And so very often I see shame being held so heavy by the ones who were discarded because they weren't the, and I'm doing air quotes, the strong ones who left and escaped the relationship. Mm-hmm. And the damage is harmful either way. And so same thing is that there's no better than worse than if you were discarded, if you had to plan an escape, you are still healing from this.
Yeah. But I think, as you said, the shame of that being dumped, I've been married for 50 years and now he's got a 12-year-old girlfriend, right? Like that shame that comes from, I'm a failure. Again, if you have a narc family heritage there where you were never good enough, they have just pinged into that wound so deeply that it's hard to come out of that.
Hey, I wanted to let you know that there are only a couple of weeks left to register for the Journey Back to You retreat. At this gathering, you will get to connect with other survivors as you rediscover your purpose and who you are now after abuse. You will leave feeling empowered to take action, hopeful that you can get through whatever is thrown at you, and deeply cared for. My excitement keeps growing as all the details are falling into place, and I can't wait for you to experience all the things we have planned. Spaces are limited, so you need to register today. Go to the link in the show notes, or you can send me a direct email at info@risingbeyondpc.com. I can't wait to see you there. Yeah. And, you know, in therapy, we do a lot with family of origin, right? That's, and I guess it kind of depends on how, you know, your schooling and your theoretical underpinnings as a therapist, but that family of origin and what we learn and kind of the meaning we give things based on our families of origin can play such a huge part in your, you know, this entire experience, your relationship experience, but also your healing experience too. If you have safe family and friends coming around you and they are safe, emotionally safe, mm-hmm. you have a resource that someone who doesn't have an emotionally safe family to support them, you have a resource there. And so that's something that absolutely we look at as well as how to build those safe relationships. What was your experience in having to go all the way back and decide, oh, geez, I don't have safety here either?
I didn't. And now they're all dead, which is just fine. It was a lot easier to heal once they started to die off. And I'm not saying that in a cruel way, but mm-mm. it all happened in a year and a half. I lost 3 family members and it was like, oh my gosh, all boom, boom, boom. So I was just learning about this when this happened. And so my experience was I had no support system. Even when my mother, for example, was alive and I had my divorce. Well, you know, people get divorced, get over it, you know? And I'm like, no, you don't understand. I've been in court 7 times. I've had 7 trials. I have a $100,000 bill. This person is destroying my life. And my mother and father's attitude was, well, you know, you must have done something wrong. And I'm just like, what? So, you know, when I coach people, and I love to coach people with supportive families. I mean, I didn't have them, but there's this twang of not jealousy, but like, good for you. Way to go to have your mom and dad on the call to say, we'll be there for her. She's going through this horrible thing and we're here. And I never had that. So, you know, it became a very isolating thing. And certainly after being arrested, and I put myself under house arrest because the judge said if I saw him in a movie theater and he would call the police that I was there, I would go to jail. So I didn't leave the house, which really amplified my learning, I have to say. I was like, let me look at that. Oh my goodness, what this, you know? So I think people that have that strong support system was just not something I had. And I had to get through it. And I never stopped reading. I'm still reading at least two or three books a month. And I just love absorbing. Like, I've got an anger book on the coffee table, a negative thought pattern book, you know, and all my friends for 4th of July came over and like, nice reading material, Trace.
Yep.
But I'm so excited to dive into them. Like, I never stop. And I've been post all of this 7 years. I never stop learning, not only for myself, but I learn from my clients in this situation. Like, I just finished a special needs divorce book for children. I'm like, what happens when I get one of those people? Now I know, right? So again, this is the language of our future, is consistent education. Shouldn't be, I've done it, I'm ready to date again, I don't have to deal with any of that. It's, there's wounds, there's things, there's journaling that we should be doing on a daily basis to help us process all of the stuff. It's there and it's hiding and it's like a little virus. And you know, for example, if you start to date again and you haven't processed learning about trust yet, you're not going to trust this person. I have friends that are out there dating now and they're like, oh my God, he opened the car door. He was love bombing me. And I'm like, okay, maybe we're not ready to date yet, because opening the car door is okay. It's the other things to be worried about. So if we don't have that trust in ourselves to understand that opening the car door is not love bombing and should not be a fearful thing, watch them, observe them, do other things, but not the, oh no, right? So again, we have to learn these skills if we're going to go out there, because we're going to be triggered by just the smallest things. And if we don't know how to process triggers, we're out of luck.
Yeah, it's interesting you brought up that example of, because that's something in the community that I run that we started talking about recently, is dating. And it moved into, how do you build trust? How do you start to gain trust? And so we did talk about, you know, how do you build trust with somebody? But then it did move to, you know, in order to trust somebody, how can you trust yourself to notice what your intuition is telling you and to not doubt it? And yeah, so that internal trust is really, really important, which again is part of that healing process, because you've been taught that everything you think, do, feel is wrong. And so it might take you some time to rebuild that trust and that self-forgiveness, you know, for you is really, you know, a big part of the healing process. And you mentioned journaling, and I know that you have some journals that you have created. I was thinking, is there a prompt that you can think of that could be really, really helpful for, I guess, someone in that aha moment that is like, oh my gosh, this is the thing. This was a scam. Like, my whole marriage was a scam. Mm-hmm. And they're sitting there with that, because it is, it's horrifying and enlightening all at the same time. But where can someone start there?
Right. So when they're going through that, my life was a lie thing, the first thing I point out is that your side wasn't a lie. Believe in the fact that you can love, because how many clients do you have that say, I'm unlovable. I my trustometer is broken. I can't possibly trust. But if you look at your own side of the table, you loved, you gave. Not only did you gave 100 times more than the other person. You do know how to love, but you don't know how to be loved by true love. That's the difference. So rephrasing it helps you start on that. And so you take out that journal in this situation and you're like, okay, so what was my role in this relationship? Did I love them truly with my heart? Did I give? Did I try? Did I communicate? Yes, you tried to communicate, but you're trying to communicate with a narcissist who can't communicate. Doesn't make your skills broken. So validating yourself in this journey and then looking at literally section by section, memory by memory, I call it. And as you process a memory, and I'm going to hold up a journal, but I know we're on audio, but it's called My Story of Narcissistic Abuse. Mm-hmm. And I have it divided into idealized, devalue, and discard sections. Because the way you felt in the idealized stage is completely different than you did in the end, right? But
yes,
behaviors that you might have seen, this is what it sounded like. So you say, take that beginning of your cycle of your relationship and you go, I was the best thing they ever saw. They couldn't get enough of me. Da, da, da. And we know now that was fake, but still hold on to the fact that you were an amazing person in the beginning, right? But look at the tactics. Like if I go back and look at memories from my relationships, I can demystify, you know, oh, we had a great vacation, but I never liked that vacation. We used to go to Argentina with his family and I hated it. And then mm-hmm. they called me ingrate for not wanting to go on a $100,000 vacation. And I was just like, I didn't know why. So I took that. That was even in the love bomb. I took that into this journal and I processed it. And I processed different memories from those trips and went, oh my God, they were torturing me. No wonder I didn't like those trips, right? So I'm demystifying, and I have that particular example in one of my journals over there that I put a label on, they who shall not be named. But I processed one memory of this horseback riding experience, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't want to go. You have to go. They shamed me. They belittled me. They pressured me. They guilted me. And then they promised me and said, it was only an hour ride. Come on. You have to face your fears. Be a big girl, right? I've got thrown off a horse in a river and dragged by my foot. I didn't want to go horseback riding again. Yeah. It was in my thing, but they made me go. And it was a 6-hour horseback riding thing. And my horse knew it. I got bucked off twice. I'm crying and they were horrible. If I look back at the behaviors of that one little thing on that stupid trip, was they gaslighted me. They lied to me. They did this. They blamed me. I mean, I looked at that one thing and I wrote down what happened to recall, but then the processing was like 5 more pages to go, no wonder I struggled. They were gaslighting me and lying to me and doing all of these things in one single event. And so when you can process those memories through a journal, that's what I do when I talk to clients, right? And you do too. Hey, well, what you just experiencing, did you hear the gaslighting there? Can you see that, right? So I have each chapter is like what it might sound like, what it might feel like, what emotions were you feeling? Why did you choose that emotion? Like, here's the why, you know, I felt disrespected. I was unloved. I felt this and that. And you put that together with a single memory and all of a sudden, you have an understanding of the things that you might have missed.
Yeah. And I'm thinking like the breaking down of the label you have given yourself. Mm-hmm. And maybe it was given to you, but you've now taken it on yourself of like, gosh, Tracy, you were so ungrateful. Look at this amazing trip. And so if you hold on to this, like, wow, I was ungrateful or whatever, you know, the label is. And then you break it down. It's like, yeah, there was really nothing in that trip to be grateful for.
Yeah, no.
I was harmed and I was, you know, taken yeah. advantage of and lied to and all of these things. Mm-hmm. And if you take that, does that still fit the label ungrateful?
Right.
Or not good enough or whatever the label might be based on your situation.
It's a brilliant way to process by taking it. And again, this is what a therapist or coach does. They're helping you see the truth in each little story that you share and opening your eyes to that was abuse. Did you see, can you see that part there? Oh man, yes, right? For me, I would have said to you when he asked for the divorce that we had a perfect marriage and never fought because we never did. But all of these other things, all of the gaslighting, all of the lies, all the financial infidelity. I had no idea that he had you know, literally 12-year-old girlfriends. I mean, it was crazy, right? So we find the truth when we start to dig into our own minds and dissect those thoughts and memories, because they were telling you, you're an ingrate, you're not good enough, you're not smart enough, blah, 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 you know, and we dissect it. And then we can let go of it. And can I share my letting go story?
Yes, absolutely.
It's a very quick little story, but I tell people. So I teach a class in letting go. And so the first thing I say is, well, what do you want to let go of? Oh, I just want to let go of it all. Well, we have to kind of nail down. Let's start with one thing. And we nail down, I'm holding on to anger, for example, right? So here's the story. And there are two monks on their way back to the monastery after the rains. They reach a river and there's a woman standing there. Help me, I can't get across. So the old monk whips her over his shoulder, carries her across and puts her down. And for the next 6 hours, the two monks walk to the monastery. When they get there, the young monk starts to scream at the old monk. How could you touch a woman? You know we're not supposed to touch a woman. And he's freaking out. And the old monk puts his hands together and says, I put her down 6 hours ago. You're the one holding on to her. What are you holding on today, this moment, that you can put down? You know what? You are angry. It made you really pissed off. But do we need to hold it for the next 6 hours? That's where we get the power to learn the skills of letting go, identifying it, and then using the power of I feel it, I understand it, I sit with it, and I release it. And it's not that you're okaying what they've done. You're not validating and saying, it's okay, I've forgiven them. That didn't work so well for me, right? But it is the power of not holding the pain that changes our life.
Yeah, and it's not a one and done. Like family members, friends who don't understand are like, just get over it. And you're like, yeah, please, like, if you know how to do that, I will do that. I will do whatever you tell me. But yeah, it's not this process and it's you're over it. It's just this long-term process that gets easier with time. And then the language I like to use, and this is semantics, and everyone in my practice knows that I hate the term acceptance. Like that's a very strong word and it's just semantics, but I choose the language being at peace with. Mm-hmm. And so it's similar to that letting go or that release is like, I'm at peace with whatever the decision, with what has happened. It does not take away what happened at all. It's just that you're at peace now.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
With this. And it's funny because it means the same thing, right, as acceptance and radical acceptance. I just don't like that language. I just don't like it for whatever reason. But I wanted to move on. So a lot of my audience are dealing with family court and the things like in your book, you can't make this shit up, right? I'm like, yep, Netflix worthy. This one's Netflix worthy. And you're not believed because it's from, again, like we talked about before, it's like from a human perspective that doesn't have these traits. It makes zero sense. Zero. Makes no sense. No logical sense at all. But in your book, and it is, you know, the subheading or subtitle is you can't make this shit up. So, right. So how do you help? I assume you work with mostly women. How do you help women that are in that space of like, I don't even know how to start this story because it is crazy and help them kind of process through that, get support as they go through that? Because I think you and I both know that community piece, that healing with others is so important. But yeah, how do you kind of help, you know, through your book and just through your coaching when women are in that space of like, oh, God, can't make this up?
Yeah. And I do about 40% men, which is fascinating because of the female narcs are actually, they're a whole breed on themselves. And we all know about the narcissistic moms but when you're divorcing one, it's a different game and it's pretty horrible. But, you know, when they come in and they're just at the deer in the headlights, shocked, you can't make this up. I named my book because three clients, and they were all men, in a day, said it. They got on, you're not going to believe this. You can't make this shit up. Three times. And I'm like, okay, Destiny, I hear you.
I listen. I mean, I hear you
every day, but it certainly made sense. So we demystify whatever they're going through. We validate what they're going through because they are not getting that kind of validation from their friends. Everyone gets a divorce. Just move on. You know, why don't you go and, you know, get back on the horse, go out and date. And I know you've only like had this divorce idea for 3 days, but go date, you know, change your life, take it back. They don't understand what you are unraveling that onion and what's going to happen. So they need that validation. They need education. They need tools depending on where they are. If they are still, I have three girls in one of my support groups right now, they're still living in the house with the narcissist, but almost planning their escape. So they need tools to learn how to communicate with them better in the house to kind of help things de-escalate 24/7. Other people are needing the tools to learn about lawyers and what their rights are because they've been gaslit. And that's one of the biggest like love things I do is, you know, you're never going to get any money. You're a stay-at-home mom. You're never going to get the kids. I'll take them away. Gaslighting, gaslighting, gaslighting. So when they come to me and I go, well, that's not the way the law works. You have rights. And you're, you know, I know you've been married for 25 years to this person. And he's saying that you have no money. You're never going to get a single penny. That is not the way the law works. So let's get her on that, grounded in what her rights are so that you drop some of the gaslighting fears because you'll never do it. You'll da-da-da-da-da. If you have all of those fears, you're going to be frozen and unable to fight. And that's exactly what the narcissist wants in a divorce. They want you to be frozen and take every smack that comes to your head and not complain about it, right? But when we get empowered with, this isn't the way it's going to work, that's one way to look at it. But no, I don't think so. And you start to take back your power. And, you know, if you're lucky enough to be away from them, it amplifies and helps the healing go. But I think just getting them in there, listening, validating, and just seeing patterns that might be from childhood that made them vulnerable. So there's an unraveling. And again, every person's going to be different, but that's kind of how we start.
Yeah. And that if you are listening and you have those stories that we as this collective community, so not just the Rising Beyond community, not just Tracy's community, but the community of those of us who are really trying to support, really trying to educate those that have gone through it before you, we believe you. You do not have to defend yourself to us because we believe in what it happens. And we hear, unfortunately, I wish that, you know, these were like unique experiences, but we hear it every day.
Yeah.
And so I think that that piece is so strong of like, we just being believed.
And narcissists thinks they're so unique. I made a meme once for Instagram that I put a picture of a giraffe and I actually looked up the stats of a giraffe and no two spots are ever going to be the same. No two giraffes. They truly are unique. Every single one of them. But a narcissist just thinks they're unique. Yet every single spot has been done to someone else, right? I even found out that the dumbass that had me arrested had called the police 3 times onto the ex-wife. It was his pattern. It was his, oh, that worked. Let me try that again, right? They're not that unique. So the things that we are hearing are like, we're not going, yeah, heard that, because that's not validating to you, but this happens and here's what we can do about it. Changes their life instead of, yeah, whatever. I've had people come to me that their therapist or coach was like, yeah, everyone has that happen, you know. Yes, maybe, but that doesn't mean we invalidate what you're going through. That is just cruel. Hopefully you're gone from that therapist.
Yeah, absolutely. And there, you know, I talk about this a lot in my content is that I'm a trained therapist. I, you know, went to graduate school in a couples and family program. I've been doing this forever. And I was not trained within that program, that graduate program on how to work with domestic violence, narcissistic abuse, very little. And so thank goodness there's so much more information and education out now. I mean, I was trained in like the early to mid 2000s. So that was quite a while ago. But there are therapists that don't understand. And they can be harmful to you.
Yeah. I've had at least 3 in the last month that I've got the clients afterwards who told them in couples counseling with the narcissist that you guys just have a different love language.
Ah.
That's what it is. And I'm like, no, you know, you're reading the wrong books. I'm not saying the love languages isn't a valid thing, but when you're dealing with a narcissist who is a blamer and maliciously trying to control every single thing about you, this has nothing to do with the love language, unless you want to add one called control, because that's right. The love language of a narcissist. But for therapists to be throwing that like stuff out there, and then others that are like, every day I hear some therapist had said to a client that, oh, narcissist is just a trendy thing. Don't jump on that bandwagon. You know, you can't diagnose them. So just walk away from that idea and I'll help you. And it's unvalidating to the people who have read the books and gone, you're looking in my living room window, right? So there's a lot of community that needs to be educated, but academia needs it. So does the DSM-5. I think that next one has to have something that sort of lists out what it is like to be a survivor, a victim. Because right now we can go PTSD, CPTSD, but that doesn't cut it. There's more to it. You know, my doctor was like, well, I didn't know what was going on with you. I thought you were going to be bipolar because you were so erratic. No, I was in trauma. Doctors need to know that, right? So we need to change it and have something that says a victim of abuse presents this way. And that would change the diagnosis of the victim, not only with a therapist and a psychologist, but it would also change it with the doctor who's prescribing them meds for depression or anxiety, not thinking they're crazy because you're having a divorce. No, this is torture, you know, and if the doctors understood this is how a person presents, that would change the world tremendously.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I fully agree. And there just needs to be so much more done. But this has been such a secret, right? It's very secretive because secrets allow the abuse to continue. Mm-hmm. And so when now, right, the secret's kind of getting out and things are changing, but we're still behind. We're still behind the time. Well, again, you and I could talk for probably days about this. But I want to let our listeners know where they can find you. And if you're driving, you're folding laundry, you don't have to stop what you're doing. All of the information on how to reach her will be in the show notes below this. But where can people find you?
My website is called Narcissist Abuse Support, not narcissistic, just narcissistabusesupport.com. And you can find out anything about me from anywhere or whatever I am, but it's we've got like 600 pages. If you are, I have a whole section of who is your narcissist, and there's a free ebook on each one. You could either get it for free on my website, or you can go to Amazon and buy it. It's if you've got you're co-parenting with one, if you are doing this, if you've got a mother. So the resources that we spend so much time, you know, got to get legal support. You don't have any money. Here's a listing of every legal support in the country. By state, here's a legal list of every single domestic violence agency that does give counseling in the United States. So the resources for anyone going through this are gathered and easily found. And then you can get into my Facebook group. There's so much that you can do from my website. So go ahead and follow me and check out some stuff. I'm there. My journals are all there. There's 32 of them. And so it's how to manage your triggers, how to trust again. Again, that, you know, my narcissistic abuse story where you're dissecting and learning the tools to try to extract what the truth was in those memories. All that's on the site.
Yeah. And you can kind of pick and choose what fits for you within that, mm-hmm. right? So wherever you are at, there is something there for you. And I can tell you all just, you know, from talking with Tracy is that she fits very similarly to me is that we are really protective of you. We want you to feel cared for and held. And so I guarantee her resources will show that as well.
Thank you.
Yeah. So thank you so much for being with us. I'm so glad that we are now connected and we're close. We're both in Colorado, which is amazing to find someone else in my state that very much understands and is passionate about this work. And to all of you all listening, I hope that this was helpful. I would love to hear if there was a specific nugget that was really helpful for you. But again, Tracy, thank you. And we will catch you on the next episode of the Rising Beyond podcast.
If you're healing from relationship abuse and are looking for support and sisterhood during this journey, I'd love to invite you to the Rising Beyond community, where you will get expert guidance, connection with others going through similar experiences, and a safe place where you'll always feel seen, heard, and believed. To learn more and to join, go to www.risingbeyondpc.com. We'd love to be a part of your healing journey.